This week on Unforgotten. Felicia Cochran was born on August 10, 1965. She seemed to have a close family, was happy, and had several friends growing up. She loved sports and became a cheerleader in high school. Not to be completely deterred, she got a job at a Hardee's restaurant to provide for her children and quickly worked her way to becoming a supervisor.
It was right around this time that Felicia met Travis Cochran. Travis slowly began to show his colors. He began to isolate her.
He was questioned by the police about recording her phone calls, but Felicia wouldn't press charges.
Felicia had arranged for her cousin Juliana to travel to Birmingham with her.
Her mother thought she'd stayed overnight, as they'd discussed, and went straight to work. Until she received a call that Felicia had not shown up for her shift at Hardee's.
Reported a car on fire on Turner Mill Road, kind of a rural.
Let's bring Felicia home. Hey everyone, this is Sellers.
And this is Stormy.
And this is Unforgotten,
where each episode will highlight unsolved missing, murdered, and suspicious death cases in Alabama in order to raise awareness and hopefully obtain some answers for victims and their families.
Please remember that any individual referenced in the podcast should be considered innocent until found guilty in a court of law, and any opinions or views expressed in the podcast are solely those of participants. Listener discretion is advised, as some of the content discussed in the podcast may contain violence or graphic descriptions and may not be suitable for all audiences.
And now for episode 38, Felicia Cochran.
Hey, guys, and welcome back. I am exhausted.
I bet you are. There's been a lot going on over there.
Oh my gosh, I'm tired. The dog was up and down all night.
Oh yeah. All right, is that dog in the literal term or is that some kind of secret code? My dog was up and down all night.
The weather has been horrible.
Yeah.
And we have a German Shepherd.
Oh, you have a German Shepherd?
Yes.
I didn't know that you had a German Shepherd. Why did I not know that? I knew you had a dog.
Yeah, he's a German Shepherd and he's an old boy now and he's mostly deaf,
yeah.
And which is great for the storms because he has really bad anxiety during storms, or had. Now that he doesn't hear so well, he can't really hear the thunder anymore, so it's calmed him down a lot. Because it used to be that he would literally want to sit on my head during storms.
Yeah.
It was not fun. But
your works don't bother him either, I suppose.
Oh my gosh. He was still up and down all night because he also doesn't want to go outside when it's raining. I don't blame him. I don't want to go outside either.
I don't think they have to hear it for it to bother them for animals. Do they have this kind of like radar or something, don't they? For weather?
And I looked like a crazy person out on the front, the back porch early morning because he needed to go outside because he was driving me nuts. And I basically was chasing him off the porch, like, go to the bathroom. I'm not letting you back in. And it was like a game of like, you're not coming up to the door. Go get out in the yard.
Battle of the wills.
Yes. And he finally was like, oh, fine. I'm going in the rain. And it was a little bit better after that. But it was a rough night. Like, I didn't sleep very well in general because our power was out. And I need sounds to sleep. Oh. Like I normally have a fan that runs, like the overhead ceiling fan normally runs, but I have like a normal fan that has for white noise.
Yeah.
Like a tower fan.
A lot of people
and
do that. Yeah.
When it's really quiet, because I hear everything. Everything wakes me up. I'm a light sleeper. And I didn't have all that last night, so I just did not sleep well.
I always sleep with earbuds in because, well, when you know who snores. not as much as he used to because he has a guard now. But anyway, but still, I kind of got into the habit of using them. And now when I don't have them in, it bothers me. However, sometimes I like because they're just regular earbuds where you touch them and that turns them on and off, you know. And every once in a while, my ear will fold just right and it'll turn it on.
Yeah.
So I'll be listening. Last night, I think probably about 10 episodes of a podcast went by and I didn't, somehow I didn't know it.
Don't even know. Yep.
So I had to go re-download them all so I could listen. Well, anyway.
I thought about that last night, but my phone was on like 10%.
Oh, yeah. So yeah, you had to stay conserved. Well, gosh, you guys had like flash flooding and hail and tornado watches.
Yes. And then on top of that, there was like a hazmat spill. And
oh, yikes.
It was a lot of stuff. And we had storms last week, and I think there's supposed to be some more later this week. And
yeah. Well, you know, this is all my inner geek. So, like, I am just fascinated with tornadoes, and I know you guys are, like, probably completely over it by this time in the season, but, like, even one of my favorite movies is Twister, so.
You know, I've actually never been in a tornado. Like, we always get the warnings.
Yeah.
But they always miss us. We did have one, like, run basically a trail right not far from our house, is like right behind us. Mm-hmm. And my dad was over here. It had been raining and we were going somewhere. He was coming to pick me up to do something. And we heard the sirens going off and we walked out on the porch, on the front porch, to see if we could hear anything, which, you know, sirens are going off. I don't know really what we were thinking, but we couldn't hear anything, never did hear anything. And it really was not far behind us, but never heard it. And, you know, supposedly they're really loud. It's just crazy. But we're supposed to have more storms later this week. So we've got a lot of little tiny branches down, not like big tree branches, but like twigs, basically, you know, all over the yard. And I had just power washed.
Oh, man.
And now you can't even tell. So frustrated.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Well, I mean, geez, over the last week, like, the storms up north hit, like, 7 states.
Oh, man.
Apparently, like, 7, well, gosh, I don't even think it was that. 5 of them hit in Alabama, up in the North Alabama area.
Yeah.
So, my gosh, you know, I was so on watching them, the geek I am, you know, I love watching, like, the storm chasers and stuff.
Yeah.
I was so like into it. There's a guy named Max Velocity. I don't know if you've ever seen him before, but
nope.
He has a YouTube channel, and he like has, in fact, just because of, I think because of all the high storm warnings and the activity going on, he may have already been there, but he just upgraded his whole studio. So he was like showing it off.
Wow. A couple
days ago. But
I'll have to check him out.
Yeah. He's kind of cool. He's really geeky. But he is like on it. And I don't know if he has other people that help him, but it looks like it's just him.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's like set up to get all of the warnings. So you're like in the middle of his broadcast, you're like, tornado warning, please get to your, you know, all kinds of things. So
yeah,
it was interesting to watch while it was happening, because I was watching like the tornadoes drop live down on ground in Huntsville.
Oh, wow.
And up in, what was it, Hammondsville or Hammond something. Anyway.
You're more on top of the weather than
I was. That's what I was thinking. I was like, I'm sending you messages. Get to your safe place yesterday. Remember?
Yeah.
You're going to get hurricane force winds down there.
I was like, I'm in the bathtub. But I'm actually taking a bath.
I don't know. I just think it's just funny. But you have no worries. Like when things like that happen, it seems like I always think that they're such a big deal. But I suppose that's just because I'm over here and you guys are used to that kind of stuff down there.
I had texted my mom and said, I'm going out to Mobile if anybody's looking for me. And she said, oh my God, you're supposed to be sheltering in place. And I was like, oh, Emma, whoops. Sorry. So I probably should pay more attention, but I also didn't have power. So, you know.
Yeah.
It is what it is. So.
Get on your little soapbox. Ready for the soapbox, people?
I've had a little bit of time to cool down, but then we talked about that we were going to bring it up again, and now my blood pressure is back up.
I know, mind you.
Like, okay, first off, I woke up yesterday at 6:45, and there was an Amber Alert for a 3-year-old in Jefferson County.
Such a cute little boy.
Yes. And the initial name for the little boy didn't ring a bell or anything. And there wasn't identification of the vehicle that he might be in. But then when I opened up my Facebook, James Spann had shared additional information. Mm-hmm. And the name of the abductor was included. Willie Edward McLean Jr.
And I'm telling you, when I saw that, I was like, okay, wait, that name sounds so familiar. Why does that name sound familiar? And I know you've been dealing with this a little more recently because you were talking to somebody about it.
My stomach bottomed out. Because Willie Edward McLean Jr., if you haven't listened to our episode on Hewlin Hardwick, and again, I apologize because I totally mispronounced his name in the episode. Willie is who turned himself in right after Hewlin's death. Not his death, his murder. Hewlin was murdered. He was sitting in a parked car and somebody walked up to the driver's side and opened fire. And Willie turned himself in a few days later. He was arrested and charged with capital murder. Yeah. That was dismissed.
I'm going to repeat this. He was murdered in his car, and this guy turned himself in for that murder.
Right. And was charged with
capital murder. Yeah.
And I was like, because I was pissed, but I had asked, like, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
About the motion to dismiss in Hewlin's case.
Mm-hmm.
And I never heard anything back. And I have sent 2 follow-up messages since then and never got a response. So I called as soon as I saw the thing come through. And it didn't, the initial alert didn't have the guy's name.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw it on James Spann Facebook. And as soon as I saw it, like my stomach dropped. The abductor in that Amber Alert, that's the guy in our case. He is the guy that turned himself in. And he got off on that motion to dismiss. They dismissed the charges.
It's just...
Before I just go flying off, unhinged, let me confirm there's not another guy by this name.
Right.
I was like, mother f- him.
Yeah.
This guy has a murder charge, a capital murder charge, and 3 attempted murder charges.
Yeah.
And we've tried to get in touch with like the clerk's office or whatever to try to get a copy of this and... haven't been successful in that. Hewlin's family doesn't know why it was dismissed either. Capital murder. Okay. Then that's not it. Like I'm looking at just the results. So there's a 2012 domestic violence third assault that was remanded. These are charges. There is a 1992 murder charge. It was dismissed. There is a 1998, it would also be 97 initially, but 98 because it starts in district court and then it's moved into circuit court. Attempted murder charge dismissed. That was because there was actually a female in the car with Hewlin when that happened.
Right.
So he had a capital murder charge and then an attempted murder charge for the female. That so both those charges were dismissed. And then there were 2 additional attempted murder charges in 1999. At least they show up with 2 different case numbers. Or no, actually looking at this, there's an extension. I need to see if I can get some more information on this one. It says 1999, attempted murder, guilty plea, and then his probation was revoked in 2005. But for some reason, in September of 99, the case was dismissed. A motion to dismiss was filed.
And that just flabbergasted both of us.
So I, knowing that I see the name, and I know I've looked at this before, and I know this backstory with the name, and I'm like, are you kidding me right now? We have been trying. His brother Joel has been trying to get somebody to look at this for years, but we've been trying for over a year to get somebody to look at this. We've asked, we've tried to get in touch with the DA. We've tried to get in touch with the attorney general. We've tried to get in touch with the media. Nobody will listen to us. The guy turned himself in, and they released him on bond. Then they dismissed the charges. He shot the mother before he kidnapped that child. She was treated for non-life-threatening injuries.
But still, yeah.
That they arrested him for interference with custody, child removal and concealment, and then attempted murder. And if somebody had listened to us at any point over this last year, or Joel at any point since 1997, this would not have happened.
Right.
And if there had been policies and procedures in place to review these cases, so families had an avenue to review these cases or request these reviews, then this would not have happened. Maybe it would have happened because it takes time, but at least it would have already been in the process, but nobody is listening. I said, so you have somebody who has a history and a pattern of doing this and has done it again because they got away with it before. And it's exactly what we've been saying. There's nothing but air and opportunity, because no matter what you think about the person and their lifestyle, there's still somebody responsible for their death walking around out there. And eventually they're going to try it again. This is why that legislation is needed, because families need to have an avenue to request review of these cases. There need to be policies and procedures in place, because we say it all the time, because it doesn't matter whether you agree with somebody's lifestyle or not. There's still somebody that is responsible for their death out there, for their murder.
Right.
And they're still out there walking around. And we talk about it all the time, that there is nothing but air and opportunity between them and doing it again. And because they got away with it the first time, what's to stop them from trying again?
Right. Yep.
This was just one of those things where I'm like, oh my gosh, we've been saying this. And here it is. And we had just talked to somebody like a week to 2 weeks earlier about trying to get that motion to dismiss again.
Right.
And it's like, this could have been changed. This could have been different. It could have been avoided. It could have been, but it wasn't.
No, I tell you, I was just beside myself yesterday. I was like, how this tells other people, you know, that they can get away with murder, literally.
And again, let me make clear, these charges are just charges.
But it still presents that to those around them, whether it's the guy's guilty or not.
Yep.
The appearance.
These are charges and people are presumed innocent until proven guilty.
Right.
You know, there was enough there to charge him.
Yeah.
I'll just leave it at that.
Right.
And it's infuriating. It is infuriating to have a family trying so hard to get attention and knowing that, and still, come on, guys, listen. Oh, God, it was incredibly frustrating. And I was just worried.
Yeah.
You know, how that was going to end up.
I know.
Thankfully, the 3-year-old was found safe.
Yeah.
So I'm thankful for
in
that.
The end, but.
And again, you know, all we have right now is what's in the newspaper, the media articles. It may come out that it's a completely different scenario.
That is very true. So we'll give it that. Yeah. Oh, my heavens.
It's not a good scenario. It's not a good situation or circumstance or anything like that, but it is a perfect example of why the legislation is needed to establish these policies and procedures for cold case review. So if you haven't signed the petition,
please sign do it. That.
Yep. Talk to your local reps about it. The legislative session's over for this year, but there is next year, and we know there's probably some things that need to be tidied up in it to get it into a format that will be more likely to pass through. So, and to any of our state reps that are listening, if you're interested in sponsoring it, let us know.
Yes, please.
Because somebody's got to do it. I do it myself, but I can't. But talk to your local guys. I mean, this is important because of exact situations like yesterday.
Yes.
And there needs to be some kind of review out there, not just for these situations, but because families deserve answers. You know, the victims deserve justice. The families deserve answers. And it just, what would you want to happen if this was your child, if this was your parent, your family member, you know, your sister? We're talking about Felicia today. You know, what if it was your sister? You just put yourself in that position, and what would you want to happen? How many eyes would you want on it? How often would you want that to be looked at? Would you want to be sitting here decades later, still not knowing?
Right.
So today we're actually going to be in St. Clair County, who actually did receive a fair share of the heavy weather over the weekend. Oh, and don't forget to vote in the nappies.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Will you have until May 26th for voting?
Yep. Midnight. If you forget in the morning, you can do it like up to midnight.
Yep. I figured people were probably getting tired of seeing all the posts. I've been trying to like slack off on that, but make it a story so it still pops up a little bit as a reminder.
Yes.
Vote, please. We appreciate it. St. Clair County is located in the northeastern edge of central Alabama. The county's eastern edge borders the Coosa River, which feeds into Logan Martin Lake between the Neely Henry Dam on the north end and the Logan Martin Dam on the south end. It's approximately 270 miles of lake on roughly 17,000 acres. Its nickname is the Lake of a Thousand Coves by locals. The county website boasts arts and culture with theaters, galleries, museums, and live music venues. A 65-acre park called Lakeside Park is at the south end of Pell City's Civic Center. It has a fun beach area, parks, trails, and several fishing tournaments, apparently. And Pell City is where our case takes us today.
That's right. Today's Unforgotten case is coming up on its 32nd year being unsolved.
Whew.
Yeah, that's a long time. Like so many others, this is just terribly long to go without resolution. So we hope you will listen and share her story far and wide. There seems to be so much information on this case that honestly, we find it a little hard to believe that there hasn't been an arrest or at least some progress made on the case. But we'll talk more about that. I also want to give a shout out to Marissa Jones, the host of the Vanished podcast, as one of our sources. She did a fantastic job sharing this case a couple of years ago, which included interviews with the family. So please check out her podcast covering so many missing person cases.
Felicia Cochran was born on August 10, 1965. She seemed to have a close family, was happy, and had several friends growing up. She loved sports and became a cheerleader in high school. As an adult, she was a hard worker who never missed work and loved reading. Felicia became pregnant in her senior year of high school, but she graduated and didn't let being a young mother stop her from wanting to do something with her future. Her grandmother helped watch her daughter, Brandy, and she started college to major in business. However, she took a bit of a break in the first summer and went to Texas with her cousin for a short time. When she returned, she started back to college, but soon found out she was pregnant with her second child and dropped out. Not to be completely deterred, she got a job at a Hardee's restaurant to provide for her children and quickly worked her way to becoming a supervisor. But she never quit thinking forward to her future, dreaming of one day becoming a flight attendant.
You know, I remember a lot of people talking kind of back in that time frame, and I think that used to be kind of a big deal to do, to go to like a flight attendant school.
Recently, somebody on my Facebook friends list that I actually went to high school with, they were a couple years younger than me. Mm-hmm. They did that.
Mm-hmm.
And they just jet set around the world.
I guess, really. You know, if you think of it that way, cool. Yeah. Huh. That's interesting. Yeah,
it seems like it actually would be a lot of fun. I mean, it's a pretty interesting way you get to see places that you would not normally see.
That is true. Yeah.
And it might be just a short time, but you have days off and things. So you just, you're right. Like, oh.
And I suppose you have all kinds
of perks. I'll schedule my time off, like, oh, we're flying to, I don't know, Italy.
Yeah.
And I'm going to hang out there for a few days and then I'll work on the flight back,
Right. Yeah. I suppose you get perks too. She could probably end up, down the road, she would probably be able to bring like her kids and things.
Yeah. Sky miles.
Yeah. Well, it was right around this time that Felicia met Travis Cochran. He would come in Hardee's often when she was working, but she had also been reconnecting with a boyfriend from college. Unfortunately, tragedy occurred and the boyfriend's stepfather shot and killed him. So she had a period where she was grieving the death of her boyfriend. And Travis was there. And so I think because of, having somebody there to support her, they started dating.
It was kind of a vulnerable time period.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Her mother, Mary, knew his family, though, and they apparently were known to the drug trafficking world.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah. She didn't know anything really about Travis himself, but she felt like he wouldn't be good news. But he seemed to treat Felicia great, and they seemed to have a good relationship while they were dating. Things seemed to be going well. One day, out of the blue, her mom got a call and said Felicia told her they got married.
Sometimes those early days seem a lot better than what...
Yeah.
Sometimes people put on a very good show, you know.
They do. And that's exactly, I think, what happened. Travis slowly began to show his colors. Mm. He began to isolate her from her family and friends and soon became very abusive. Her daughters actually saw the domestic violence and psychological abuse. They even remember it now, you know. So even though they were really young, they remember seeing that. They would call his parents to come and intervene. So they would come over and either take him or her, you know, out of the home till they cooled down. While they were married, Travis and Felicia had a baby boy, and the abuse continued. She caught him speaking to other women as well. I don't think she really, it sounded like from the research I did that she caught him, but she didn't confront him right away. But she just decided that it was finally time to make a change, and she left and went to her mom's.
You know, that's a hard thing to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when a lot of times people think of domestic violence or abuse as a physical thing where there are marks that are left, like, oh, you know, we don't see bruises. We don't see, you know, this, that, or the other. But that's not always the case.
Yeah.
And the mental and emotional abuse leaves a lot of trauma
it does,
to deal
yeah.
with. And it's also very hard on kids who are watching that because it's not teaching them what healthy relationships are.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and depending on who the person is and how well they present themselves to other people, you know, that's where a lot of the doubt and things come in, and people don't feel like they can come forward because it's, oh, I know so-and-so, they'd never do that.
Yeah.
Well, they did.
Yeah.
You know?
And absolutely. Yep.
So I'm glad that she had family there that could, you know, knew or had an idea of what was going on and were there to support her.
Right.
So you mentioned that she had a baby boy, so that makes three, right?
Yep, three kids.
Okay. Just making sure that I'm keeping up with it.
Yeah.
Felicia leaving and going to her mother's didn't really stop anything. Travis's obsession escalated and amped up to stalking her. He would tap their phone lines, constantly watch the house, and follow her. He was questioned by the police about recording her phone calls, but Felicia wouldn't press charges. Before and after their separation, he had threatened her with a gun more than once. One event occurred when she went to pick up her son, Kadarius, who they had shared custody of, and Travis would watch him while she was at work. When she arrived and tried to pick him up and then leave, Travis pointed a gun at her and said he would kill her if she took their son. Somehow, she managed to talk her way out.
I think she's been very fortunate. It sounds like she had to talk herself out of a lot of situations.
And in a volatile situation like that, that's scary.
Yeah.
Especially when you have a kid, too. And I think sometimes in those moments, things could go very, very wrong when it's just two adults that are dealing with things. But sometimes whenever you have one adult that's somewhat unhinged, mm-hmm. The other adult is able to maybe remain a little bit more calm because there is a child present.
Right.
And they know they can't really react in a way that they maybe want to react.
Yeah. That's me. I'm pretty calm in an emergency. It's mm-hmm. afterwards that I get it. You know, that I let go.
We mentioned that Travis's family was in the drug scene. His father, Robert, was one of the higher ups on the food chain. And it seemed that they had enough of a reputation in the area that no one would cross the Cochranes. It seemed that may have influenced Felicia's reservations to report or press charges against Travis.
Makes sense.
Understandable. I mean, when you have people that are afraid to come forward in cases, it makes sense that she would be a little bit hesitant to press charges or move forward with them.
Right.
Especially when you have somebody that's threatening your life regularly.
You know. And then they have that kind of a family to back them. Yeah.
Felicia did manage to socialize some, though it wasn't easy with Travis lurking everywhere. She managed to strike up a relationship with a man named Jeffrey in Birmingham. Unfortunately, this is where things took a terrible turn.
On Thursday, June 11th, 1992, 26-year-old Felicia told her mother she was going to Birmingham to go to visit Jeffrey. Concerned about a potential thunderstorm, she and her mother talked about Felicia staying in Birmingham overnight to avoid driving back in bad weather. She agreed that even though she needed to work the following day, that she would stay if the weather continued to be so terrible. Felicia had arranged for her cousin Juliana to travel to Birmingham with her, as she was a bit nervous about Travis stalking her still. And she was going to try to get ready before Juliana's Bible study to take her, but if not, then she would pick her up after and then head to Birmingham together. Roughly around 6 p.m., Felicia left her mother's house. And before heading out of town, she stopped by her relatives, where her daughter Brandy was staying that day, and asked her daughter if she wanted to go to the salon. But Brandy was having so much fun, so she said no, she wanted to stay. And Felicia left her to enjoy her time with her cousins and drove away in her gray 1987 Nissan Sentra and headed to the salon.
What we don't think Felicia realized was that she was being followed. Shortly after she arrived, a salon employee was taking out the garbage and saw that Felicia and Travis were standing outside in what appeared to be a very heated argument. She went back in and had the manager call the police. When she went back outside, both Felicia and Travis were getting into Felicia's car and leaving the salon. When Pell City police arrived, since Felicia's car was no longer there and neither were Felicia and Travis, they looked inside of Travis's car, which was still parked in the salon parking lot. They noted some questionable things, including rope, duct tape, and other items. What exactly were those other items?
I don't know. They don't mention it in anything. So
I don't know. I would like to know.
What other? Yeah. And maybe it was nothing important.
Yeah. It could have been garbage, you know. But for some unknown reason, they didn't do anything with the car.
Yeah. I don't get that.
Maybe it's because they were both adults.
Anything was wrong.
And they left. Yeah. They have the ability to do that. We know. And he could have been coming back. And maybe
duct tape doesn't necessarily mean anything.
It doesn't have to be sketchy. No. You know, people
and he didn't bring it with him, right?
People could just it was still in his car. He didn't take it with him and they could carry that stuff around. Maybe he needed it for work.
I know.
Jesus. I guess they didn't know what was gonna happen. So got on break a little bit. Don't think that's weird at all when you look over in there and you have a history of stalking and life-threatening and all these things and think, that's absolutely normal things to carry in your backseat.
And I don't know how much they, you know, with her not reporting things, how much do they know or not know? I don't know. I mean, Pell City isn't huge, so it could be that they did know, but maybe they didn't.
I mean, those are normal items I'd keep in my car. I'm kidding. I never have anything I need in my car. I have two umbrellas, though, that are never within reaching distance when I need them. They were to return the next day to search the car further, but go figure, the car was gone.
Oh, surprise, surprise.
Yep. As far as anyone publicly knows, they didn't pursue leads on the car any further. And, again, they didn't have any reason to at this point,
Right.
As far as we know.
Yeah.
You know, the plan was that Felicia was going out of town. they may have been in an argument, but there's nothing at this point to say anything is wrong. You know?
Right. Yep.
So I can understand why they would say, okay, there's some odd things in here. If the car's still here in the morning, then we'll look at it some more, because obviously,
yeah,
you know, they didn't come back to it, but the car is gone. Then somebody came back and moved it, and there's nothing been reported.
Right. You know. I am curious how much the salon owner said when they called 911.
Yeah. Did they tell them about the fire? Probably. I mean, it was obviously enough.
The argument was enough.
It appeared enough. Yeah. Yes. For them to think, we need to call somebody.
Yeah.
When Felicia wasn't home the following morning, her mother thought she'd stayed overnight, as they'd discussed, and went straight to work, until she received a call that Felicia had not shown up for her shift at Hardee's. Felicia was a dedicated, hardworking employee. And as we mentioned, it would be completely out of the ordinary for her to miss work.
Yeah, that's like huge. You know, a lot of people don't really think much of it. Oh, she just, you know, could have just not shown up for work. People do that. But, you know, work history really is important in these cases, because it's when things like this are so out of character, it's something you should be concerned about.
And a lot of times employers will say they call because they're concerned.
Mm-hmm.
We know this isn't typical. Is everything okay? You know?
Right. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, not knowing about Felicia's trip to the salon, Mary then called Juliana because she knew, you know, that they were going to go together to Birmingham. She learned that she had not shown up to pick her up the evening before either. Because Felicia didn't make it before Bible study, and then again not afterwards, Juliana had just thought that Felicia changed her mind. But now Juliana was very concerned.
And again, this isn't time when there's cell phones.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not like you could shoot a text message and say, Matt, storm's coming in, decided not to drive.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Or, like, plans changed, I just don't feel like going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't that easy. You basically had to send like a smoke signal or a carrier pigeon.
Yeah. That's funny. Becoming beyond worried, Mary called Travis's parents, where Felicia's three kids had stayed the night before. However, they had not seen Felicia either. And this just drives me nuts, when her mother contacted Pell City PD to file a missing persons report, she was told that she needed to wait 12 more hours. So, you know, the 24-hour waiting before you can report a person missing. So around 7 p.m. on Friday, June 12th, 1992, Felicia was reported missing.
Oh, my gosh. So you have somebody that's reported seeing a heated argument.
Yep.
And I'm sure that when she called, she told them there's a history here.
Yeah.
And you have officers who have noted seeing rope and duct tape and odd items in this vehicle that was left in the parking lot.
Yeah.
And then gone. And she had plans.
They're adults.
That changed.
They're adults. You have to give them time.
No need to worry. There's nothing concerning here. Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see.
She's not back.
Not to mention that waiting 24 hours. Mm. And I don't know. I mean, in 1992, was that still a thing? Maybe it was. But I know that's just not a thing at all anymore.
And maybe it wouldn't have changed anything. But
it might not have.
It's the point.
I know. It could have
given didn't show. But okay, so at this point, it's not just that. It's that, okay, she left. She shows up at the salon. You have a person reporting there's a heated argument, and Felicia is, if I'm not mistaken, I read somewhere that it basically, she was being forced into her vehicle. It wasn't that she willingly got into the vehicle.
Right.
But I need to go back and look at that again. They leave. It was bad enough that the person that saw it asked for the police to be called. She doesn't show up. The police get there. They notice these odd items in the vehicle. She has no contact with the relative that she's supposed to be meeting to go to Birmingham with the plans that she's already made for Birmingham that she's told her mother about. She doesn't pick up the cousin that she's planned to pick up. She doesn't show up to work. No one's seen her.
Yep.
She doesn't come back home. Her mom calls to report her missing after all of these things. And they're like, meh.
You need to wait another 12 hours.
No big deal.
Yeah. I'm sure she'll show up.
And then the previous times he's threatened her life and abused her. And, you know, and again, given the situation, I don't know what Mary told the police when she called to make the report. But
right.
I imagine that if it were me calling to report my child missing that had been in this situation, that's information that I would have told them.
Look, yeah.
This is a history. This has been going on. It's volatile. It's dangerous. I'm concerned. I'm worried about her.
Right.
You know, this needs to be done. I don't want to wait 12 hours.
Yeah. And I don't know, in listening to the interviews, I don't think that Mary would have held that back.
Yeah. And I mean, there's only so much she can do.
Mm-hmm. After people started realizing that Felicia was missing, information began to trickle in to the neighbor from the neighbors, and they mentioned that others had seen Travis conducting his stalking outside, often outside of Mary's home.
That's scary.
And that's like even as bold as to go looking into the windows at night.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. Well, apparently this was no different on June 11th. Apparently, when Felicia was getting ready to leave her mom's, there was an Alabama power worker who was working near the home and happened to recognize Travis lurking, waiting as she was getting ready to leave on the 11th.
Oh, my gosh.
He knew who Travis was because Alabama power workers often took their lunch breaks at Hardee's, and he saw Travis in there often kind of hanging out in the back watching Felicia.
Jeez.
I know. History right there. Just crazy. A frightening discovery was made, actually, around 4 a.m. on the 12th of June. An individual on their way to work reported a car on fire on Turner Mill Road, kind of a rural back road in Talladega County, not far from the Speedway. The Talladega County Sheriff's Office responded to the scene, and the vehicle was towed to a local impound yard. The car actually wasn't linked to Felicia's disappearance at the time because no one had filed a missing person report yet. So there's a good reason why it should have been.
Yep.
You know, and different counties, so there's often a delay there, you know, in communication. Yeah. A search.
There wasn't internet.
Yeah, no internet, no cell phones, no nothing. Yeah. None of that technology that we have today. So they conducted a search around the area where the car was found, but nothing else was found in the search. So
The family did as much as they could do, including a very disturbing encounter Juliana had when they were first looking for Felicia. When Juliana arrived at Travis's mother's home, they were already sitting outside as if they were actually waiting for her to arrive. They claimed they knew nothing about Felicia's disappearance. Travis made what Juliana characterized as basically a poor show of trying to seem upset. And he also had a black eye. Wonder how he got that.
I don't know. And he didn't offer to explain it. I don't know how much she pried about it, but it was notable anyway.
You could see it and... Well, it seemed, at least to Felicia's family, that every suggestion or tip that they took to the police was met with little enthusiasm. Only a couple of times was Travis questioned, and he lawyered up fairly quickly. And they really didn't pursue questioning him any further in the future. In fact, when it came to brass tacks, the family soon felt like they were under scrutiny. That maybe the police thought they were helping Felicia hide away, or it was a hoax, or something like that. They were constantly surveilling Mary and Juliana's homes, almost like they needed to look like they were doing something, but maybe were being pressured by the Cochran family.
I want to mention here that I believe it was Brandy that was he made some public statements when Carly Russell did her whole fake disappearance. Mm-hmm. Randy made some pretty public statements at that time about that because, you know, how detrimental that could have been to families who really had missing family members.
And the statement about, you know, thinking there was pressure by the Cochran family, you know, that's what Felicia's family was feeling, you know, that
they were worried about that.
They didn't feel like they were getting help. They felt like the tips and things they were bringing in were kind of being blown off, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember reading a lot about this when we first put the case card up. Mm-hmm. And they had, you know, pretty strong opinions about it.
Yeah.
And I hate that.
Yeah. You know, I don't want to get into a huge discussion about that here, but, you know, we all know that the Black contingency of missing and murdered family or victims mm-hmm. often get a far less amount of attention than mm-hmm. others. And so, you know, bringing attention to hoaxes or, you know, just in general, having somebody like poo-pooing their, you know, their investigation because of something like the Cochran family, you know, that just makes it even worse.
Yeah. I mean, there's a huge disparity between the attention.
Absolutely.
That is received. And between women and men in general. But gosh, throw in a person of color and just, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is.
It is absolutely ridiculous. Authorities even told Mary that her church deacon said he saw Felicia with her family and she seemed fine. This, of course, was disproven, but it just showed the seeming ineptness of the investigation. But again, Mary thought maybe this was because of the Cochran family. For quite some time, any time anyone would go look at Felicia's impounded car, Robert would be seen passing by. That's Travis's dad, in case you've forgotten. And so you could deduce that someone was watching the car or the family still at that time.
It's crazy.
No joke. I mean, can you imagine going to look at the car and then just, oh.
And I mean, after all this time,
that seems like convenient time.
I could see it maybe the first time, you know, because maybe they didn't really know for sure what was in the car because, you know, that they think at least that the police wasn't really paying that much attention to the details of the case. So maybe there was some more evidence in the car that they were ignoring. But after the first time, I mean, I think it didn't sound like they like went every day to go see the car, but you know, sometimes like a new family member would want to go just take a look at it just to appease their mind or whatever.
Right.
And, but still, at that point, they were still watching.
Yeah.
Mm. Weird.
I wonder where the car is now. I mean,
it's a good question. I mean, I don't, after 32 years, who knows if it's still in there. The impound or if it was destroyed or.
Mm-hmm.
There were a few times as Travis's parents were getting older and his mother's health was failing her. Travis's mother, and her name is Johnny May, by the way. I think that's a nickname. I think her first name is really Johnny, but I don't think May is her actual middle name. I think it's just what they call her.
Well, it sounds very Alabama, so it probably
is. It does. Yeah, it does. She seemed like she wanted to tell Felicia's family what she knew. Near the end of her life, she had developed breast cancer, and she asked if Juliana would come and see her. When she arrived, Travis's sister was there, and she refused to leave the room, and eventually Juliana gave up. But she tried to give Johnny May her phone number, at Johnny May's request, actually. But in the end, apparently her daughter ended up intercepting it. So she never was able to share and unburden herself. Yeah, it is. And it just goes, you know, to show that maybe the whole family was trying to protect something there.
Yeah.
Like children of other missing persons, Felicia's kids struggle with knowing what was going on to varying degrees and not to have any resolution. Mary took custody of the two girls and tried to do the same with Kadarius, but with Travis having no evidence against him and nothing to show that he had done anything to Felicia, legally anyway, there was really nothing she could do to take his son from him. So, unfortunately, Travis and his parents, particularly his mother, would tell Kadarius that Felicia had just run away and left him. And so he had these conflicting stories on either side.
Huh.
But he did have some memories of the abuse, and he did still have some tough times, even with Travis and his parents. The atmosphere was a very strict atmosphere growing up, and until he became independent, you know, he was still steeped in all of that discipline. But the wonderful thing that we found out is that he went on to be a police officer.
Oh, wow.
I know.
That is, that's pretty awesome.
I think it's awesome because, yeah. You know, it probably, well, I believe it probably contributes to the fact that now he's really wanting to know what the facts are.
Yeah.
He still struggles a little bit with, you know, the idea, but he wants to know the facts and he wants to find his mom.
Yeah.
Brandy has gone on to actually be a part of the Black and Missing Foundation. So not only can she feel like she can help.
That's pretty awesome.
I know. I thought
that
was awesome.
They do great things.
They do. Yeah. I've seen a lot of involvement, you know, like on mm-hmm. social media and things. So, you know, she can offer her support that way to help other Black families that don't feel like they're getting equal attention to their cases.
Yeah. The family has theories about what may have happened, not only of the drug connection, but because Travis's father seemed very connected in the community, and he had a business in construction installing septic tanks. But regardless, over the last few years, some of the threats were ignored, and now Robert and Johnny May are gone.
Yeah.
We want to send out our call once again to please come forward and share any tips you have. It's been 32 years. And there are new investigators and people who care and want to help. Whether you have already come forward with information or not, you should come forward again to show investigators how much Felicia matters and that they need to review her case and reinvestigate all the facts and leads in her case. If you live in the area, you can always go into Pell City PD. If you don't want to go into the police department in person, you can contact them or Crime Stoppers online or by telephone. Chief Clay Morris boasts on their website that you can email him anytime at pcpdchief@cityofpellcity.net. So we've sent an email off to him to confirm if there is still a reward available for Felicia's case and to also see if they would give us an update or any additional information that may be available at this time. In addition to emailing Chief Morris, you may also call Pell City Police Department at 205-884-3334. Call the Crime Stoppers of Metro Alabama at 205-254-7777 or submit an anonymous tip on their website. We'll include that link and all of the previously mentioned contact information in the episode description. Let's bring Felicia home. Since Alabama Cold Case Advocacy's creation, we have dedicated innumerable hours to researching and networking in an effort to provide the largest platform we can to the cases we share. We shoulder all associated expenses with Alabama Cold Case Advocacy out of our own pocket, including the subscription fees for researching and production of the Unforgotten podcast to provide a cost-free avenue for the victims' families of those cases.
We hope you will join in our efforts to raise awareness of Alabama's missing and murdered and support these families who have been forced to carry the immeasurable loss of their loved ones and the fight for answers. If you appreciate our mission and you are inspired to make a donation, your extra support will enable the ACCA to continue our research, share the cold cases, and help those families know that they are also unforgotten.
Unforgotten is an Alabama cold case advocacy podcast recorded in conjunction with Riverside FM, hosted and distributed by Spotify for Podcasters, available on your favorite podcast platform. Intro music for the show was created by Principles of Uncertainty, who also mixed and mastered this episode. Content and production is by Sellers and Stormy. Artwork by Sellers. Credits for music, sound clips, special mentions, and any source referenced in our podcast can be found in each episode's description. We hope you will join us on all the major social media sites and continue to raise awareness of our Alabama cold cases. Until next time, thank you for listening, and remember, justice may be delayed, but the victims and their families remain unforgotten.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.